You have to know how to maneuver together with your lenders, which we did. Certain things that were planned all of a sudden were not planned. The story, I'm not going to get into, it's not a story about a certain particular asset, but I'm just in general, just to touch in general. For example, talking about office in the downtown area.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to announce our guest for the day, Yishai. Yishai, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Suja.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to share your story. So everyone, Yishai is a CRE commercial real estate entrepreneur, and he hosts the CRE Shark Eye Show. Yishai went from being a school teacher to becoming a CEO of real estate and an investment company. So we're really excited to hear from you today. Why don't you tell us, take us back in time. Obviously, you started out as a teacher. Tell us a bit about your background and how you got into real estate.
So I have a really weird story. So going back, so for everybody, what I do today basically is I'm involved in, like you said, in commercial real estate, also in prop tech, very heavily involved in prop tech, property technology, and very much in this world. I went, as you said, from a teacher to become a CEO of a company that I basically started for another investment firm. Going really back in time, taking the, you know, the trip back in time, I was a teacher for many years, meaning at the age of 35, mm-hmm. It started with me meeting a friend, just bumping into a good friend. And he said, "You won't believe it. I read this book. I'm taking all these courses." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "I read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I took courses about real estate and investing and all that stuff." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I didn't even know what he's talking about. I had no idea about nothing about business, nothing about numbers, age of 35. You know, people sometimes tell me it's too late for me. That's where I was at the time. And a couple of days later, it just flew over my head. I didn't even pay attention. A couple of days later, I go play basketball, which I don't do anymore. Meaning shoot some hoops maybe every once in a while, but not for me anymore. But I used to play basketball pretty heavily at the time. And I land on my foot and I tore my ligaments. It was bad. So you're forced to sort of lie down in bed with a leg up and do nothing. And it was pretty graphic. But anyways, I'm there. And YouTube was there at the time. Meaning, it sounds like I'm ancient, but I guess I am a little bit. And I start watching movies. And all of a sudden, I bump into this guy, Robert Kiyosaki, and learning about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I got the book. I start reading it. And I got acquainted into the investment world and what it is and real estate, of course. Shortly after, I signed up to this academy. It's an informal academy.
Real quick, Yishai, just a quick question. So what was it that kind of inspired you to want to even look into this path? Were you getting tired of being a teacher, or were you feeling burnt out? What was going on for you?
No, I was not burned out. I love being a teacher. Until today, I love to teach. But, you know, in the teaching business, quote unquote, you become an administrator eventually, go into being an administrator. And you manage things, and it's not so fun anymore for some people, for me. And at a certain point, all of a sudden, you start learning about money, and you say, wow, you have to learn so much, and I don't know that much. And, you know, having the whole concept of money working for you, an investment concept, and you say, and the more you learn, the more you understand, you don't know. And that's what drew me in. But eventually, so I went to lectures about money, which was exciting and interesting as an investor. But I think the most exciting thing was to get to know real estate. And all of a sudden, I fell in love with real estate. So I took a course about, for example, how to buy a single family home or a condo, that kind of stuff. And from that, it went to financing, mortgages, financing. And then to the multifamily, the more commercial side of things, the development. I started learning development. I took course after course after just for fun. And it started with me investing on my own and doing my own thing. And I went into a bit of construction and got involved in all kind of stuff, but it was on my own. It was not as a guy who works in it, meaning I was still an educator, but I did it on the side. And it was nice. It was fun. I did really great stuff with it and did really well.
Just another quick question for you, like growing up in a different country than, you know, most of us who are in the US, were you like concerned about your retirement or were you concerned about just like in terms of wanting to make your money work for you? What was it that was like speaking to you particularly?
So just to clarify, I am from the US, basically, meaning.
Okay, got it.
Everything was focused on the US always, meaning even as an educator, I was in the US. Then I came, basically at a certain point, I came to Israel and I lived in two countries, but focused, the business was always the focus on the US.
Mm-hmm.
But so the retirement was always there, but it was not, to me, it was more of what am I going to do with myself? It's not only the retirement and the money. It's I want to do something different. I want to do something more. At a certain point, I fell in love with real estate and I said, I want to do that as, you know, for a living. So I went to that academy and I wanted to meet with that, an advisor from that academy. And I said to him, listen, maybe you can help me. I want to really start a new career. I was 36 at the time. And he said, bring your resume. Brought my resume, looks at it. He said, you're a great educator. You have a great resume as an educator, but you have zero experience in real estate, professional experience in real estate. Maybe you invested a little bit, but you don't have a professional experience. You have zero chance to get into it. And at that point, I was really bummed out. It burned me up. And he said, you have no chance. Just give up on it. Just do what you do and invest. And I was...
That's so sad. I'm sorry that you got that message from somebody.
It was actually great because it burned me up to a point that I said, I'm going to prove him wrong. And thank God I did. I called everybody I knew. And finally, I got into... Later on, I'll explain that this is not really the way to do it. But I got a job... I got a job with a mega development company, really big development company. But I got a job as, meaning, as a guy who does the sales for condos.
Okay.
For,
okay.
Meaning high-end condos.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience in terms of going in and walking in the sites, walking in the development sites, construction sites, you know, talking to engineers and architects and all that stuff. But I was not involved in anything in the acquisition end of things and the numbers end of things, because I was just selling condos, which is awesome and great, but it was, that's what I did. I got the job. I was very lucky to get the job because they actually needed at the time. They actually told me, you never sold any apartment. You never did anything in real estate. Why would we hire you? I said, I don't know. Let me start from scratch. I'll start from the bottom. And they said, and all of a sudden they see my resume, the vice president of the company looks at my resume and he says, there's something very interesting about your resume. I want to hire you. And later on, I understood that I have connections with certain communities which serve them for selling those condos and all that stuff. So that was very helpful. I did that for 3 years. And that really was the acquaintance into the real estate world.
Okay. And this was this in what part of the US? In New York?
That was mostly selling condos.
Okay.
In all kind of areas.
In New York?
In all areas.
Okay, got it.
But it was my side at that time was finding the buyers. So I had to go around to find communities and, you know, making the ties and connections and all that stuff. But at a certain point, there was a week, and that was the week that changed pretty much everything to me, you know, for me in terms of my perspective. To get into commercial real estate, the CRE side of things. I had a meeting with a few people. Just 1 week, I had a meeting with those big people for selling penthouses, you know, for those people. And each and every one of them did something else. And I created a conversation with them. And each and every one said, I do this. One was doing M&A. I was like, what is that? And all of a sudden, it opened a new world for me. And a guy was doing development, like in mega scale, like, of you know, in New York City and all kind of other places. So it was like an eye-opener. And then the last day, I think that was the biggest eye-opener I had, came in a guy with a swag, a suit, like, you know, he walks like with confidence, a young guy, like just a little older than me at the time. And they walks in and what you got? And I'm selling him this apartment. And after 5 minutes into my presentation, he says, don't talk. I'm like, what? I'm buying it. And I've never met a person who makes a $1 million decision in 5 minutes. To me, it was like mind-boggling. What is that? So I asked him, what do you do? He said, real estate. I said, interesting. Wine in real estate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And we decided that we'll meet later on the week. He said, come to my office. I'll show you. Bottom line, he has a private equity fund and he's on the GP end of things. And he has an operation all over the States, literally multifamily. That's what he does. And he showed me everything. And I said, that's exactly what I want to do. Meaning, I don't know exactly, but that's where I want to go. And that inspired me to go and learn the numbers, to teach myself to do the numbers.
That's awesome. So you met this guy, and what do you think it was about your interaction that inspired him to, you know, kind of invest some more time in you and meet with you again?
We became friends. Like, it's a personality thing. Like, I think that I'm a natural guy. I meet people. I like people. I'm a people person. And once I meet them, once I have good rapport with someone, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't always happen. You know, some people you have great chemistry and some not.
Sure.
With that person, it was, and we became friends right away. We tried to do even more things together later on. It was a great acquaintance. It was just a great acquaintance. Actually, at a certain point, meaning after we met, he sent me a bunch of stuff and I looked at all kinds of Excels and I saw that, meaning spreadsheets and the underwriting of his people, and I couldn't understand a thing. So I started, and at the time, you're talking about times. Today you have courses, online courses. I have an online course. Everybody can go online and learn stuff. At the time, you didn't have that. You didn't have it. If you were a graduate, you know, if you went to graduate school, you could go to NYU Shack or whatever, and you could take a course, but just like that, no. So I started getting all these Excels and looking at this box, and this is coming from here, and this is coming from there, and asked questions. What does that mean? What does this mean? And used and start reading books about it and so on. Meaning I taught myself so much so that at a certain point, a big accounting firm that I was in tie with, meaning it's making the long story short, I was in touch with them and they had a big, big consulting group. And all of a sudden they came to me after talking to one of the guys there. And he says to me, we want you to become the head of real estate investment banking of our firm. And that's it. So I went there and I joined them. I was there for a little while and that was a great acquaintance. Basically, that's the point that I really got into understanding and to getting to know real estate deals on all levels, all asset classes. That was really awesome.
Uh-huh. That's awesome. And I just want to circle back on just like an overall theme in your story, which is that you were able to move from being a teacher your whole life up until you were 36 years old to starting a whole new career. And I mean, I know you're telling us bits and pieces of the story. What do you think made that possible for you to make that switch at that age? Because I think a lot of people, you know, who are in their mid-30s might feel like it's too late to really make a change like that.
It is hard, first of all, you know, not going to play it down. But it was, you know, first of all, I want to say to people exactly what you say. What you said now is 100% accurate. But it's always hard. No matter where you are, it's hard. Life is hard. It just depends how you take it, how you look at things, what's your mindset. That's what matters. And my mindset was, I love it. Mm-hmm. I want to do it. I want to get there. I want to get it done. I want to learn it. Meaning I want it to be a part of my life and I'm going to make it happen. And that was it. So for me, the mindset was the key for everything. So that's what took me for the next step. That's it. And obviously it's a lot of big steps, but
yeah.
Every big step has a lot of baby steps, and that's what you have to do. You have to just get to the next step. You have to just do the next thing that you have to do and have the mindset to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And just like to circle back on another point that seems to be a theme throughout your story is that the relationships that you have really helped, that you have developed, really helped propel you towards the next level and the next level and the next level.
That's 100%. Mm-hmm. That's the key. Mm-hmm. People, making relationships with people is the key. You have to meet people and you have to nurture relationships. When you have a contact, you create a contact with a person that is, there's great chemistry, as we said. Mm-hmm. You don't just let it go. Oh, that was a great meeting. That was a great acquaintance and goodbye. You keep that connection and you try to meet again. You nurture it. It's very, very important because that could be your future. And you don't nurture it because it's your future. You nurture it because it's real, because it's genuine. What do you think will happen if you don't keep in touch with people and all of a sudden you fall on their head after 5 years and say, hey, it's me. Remember from that thing and that deal? They're not going to pay attention to you. But if you were in touch all the time or at least somewhat of the time and there's a good connection between you, good rapport, something will happen in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really key is it's just like, you know, you don't know exactly what a particular relationship or acquaintance will turn into. And so just looking for those opportunities when you really connect and jive with someone and, you know, pursuing those and seeing where they go, you know. So this firm that you worked for, do you have any sort of takeaways? First of all, can you clarify, like, what was your role there? And then what were your sort of takeaways about commercial real estate?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Sure. So real estate investment banking is basically, first of all, I got involved in the consulting with the consulting group, obviously, but it was mostly putting private equity firms together with sponsors on sometimes on a lower level, sometimes a much higher level. Lower level means what? $5 million deals. Some of them were $100 million deals, meaning being involved in that, even though some deals didn't happen, obviously, but being involved in that and seeing the spreadsheets and having all this information coming to you and being involved and talking to all these people and putting it all together and understanding what is split with a GP and LP, what this guy expects from that guy, what is just to finding, you know, to sourcing deals, to find a better deal than the other deal. It's such an amazing education. A lot of people also ask me today, by the way, what is the best way to start? One of the ways to start is obviously becoming a finance broker. Why? Because you get to know, how to say, you learn the numbers from within. You understand what the lenders want. You understand what the sponsors want. And you're putting together deals and you're understanding the depth of why is the deal a great deal? Why is the deal not a good deal? What makes it a good deal? And all these aspects, that's so important. So that's why I think that was a great experience. Mm-hmm. That was really a game changer for me. But that was, meaning later on, meaning obviously I moved up, but
for sure,
I think that was a milestone that was really important.
Yeah, totally. Makes a lot of sense. So where did that lead you next? Like, did you want to be on the GP side after that? What did you want to do after that?
So later on, there was obviously an attempt. I wanted to become my own guy, meaning, but all of a sudden I got a position as an acquisition, head of acquisitions in a firm. And at a certain point, someone came to me from an investment firm and said, listen, we want someone to handle all our real estate. So I went and I became a CEO of a company that I formed in the U.S., which was involved in deals anywhere from Connecticut to New York to Ohio, anywhere, asset classes that were anywhere from student housing, mostly value-add deals. Some of them were condo developments, some of them were office, and some we were GPs and some we were LPs. So I learned both sides very, meaning I was very involved in both sides, and on the side of the GP, where you have to be in the juice of hiring, if it's more development, hiring the architects, understanding what is, you know, dealing with zoning lawyers, finding them, dealing with the municipalities, doing all the things that you need to do, finding the right teams. It's so much work and understanding all that aspect, meaning at that point already I was dwelled in it. And from the LP side, it was going and seeing much larger deals that you are actually are over your head, or meaning it's not your game, but checking out the sponsors, doing due diligence on the deals together with the sponsors or over the sponsors and finding the right sponsors and finding the right deals. And thank God I got involved in deals, meaning anywhere between $3 million all the way up to $300 million that we got involved in. Obviously, in some of the places we were leading the deal, some of the places we were just involved, and in some places we were just a tiny LP. But even if you are a tiny LP, you have to still do the due diligence properly. You have to know what you're doing. You have to have the right team and you have to really get into the deal and know what you're doing. So that experience really got me forward and put me out there. But for the most part, it was meaning when you get to a point that you get to do what you love to do, I think that was the greatest accomplishment. Obviously, you have equity in all those deals, and obviously you're involved in all these things, but I think that the sense of accomplishment is because you enjoy what you do, and that's the fun part.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Yishai, I know that you were talking before the show, and you were in a number of different asset classes pre-COVID, and tell us about, you know, a little bit about your experience with, if you want, about what you experienced with those asset classes and where you want to focus your attentions now that we're in a post-COVID world.
That's a great question. What the world was pre-COVID is not where the world is today. So first of all, some painful experiences with office. Of course, office is not where it was. It will be better. It will be good, but we don't know when and we don't know how. And obviously certain areas got affected a lot more than other areas. Meaning if you talk about more the urban areas, the New York cities and the like, they got hit the most because they're focused on the office. And those places got really hit hard. And now they're getting back, but it will still take a little time because the office aspect will take a little time because people get used to being home. And even if they go back to the office, they can go to the suburban office, which is a whole different concept. So there's so many things that are happening with that asset class that I got so excited about pre-COVID. I'm not saying I'm not excited about that, but I think that due to the fact that it's an unknown right now in the markets, I'm not so excited to go on it. Retail, for example.
Really quick, just on office. So just from a practical point, so those deals that were having a hard time, were you just continuing to pay the mortgage? Was there any sort of like assistance that you needed to, you know, I'm just curious, like, how did you get through that time?
So at that point, it's a very good question. But at that point, you have to know how to maneuver together with your lenders, which we did. Certain things that were planned all of a sudden were not planned. The story, I'm not going to get into, it's not a story about a certain particular asset, but I'm just in general, just to touch in general. For example, talking about office in the downtown area, okay? And that's not only us, that's everybody else, which was a home run, pretty much a home run pre-COVID, right? Get there, find that, it's prime location, it's great, and so on and so forth, okay? It's urban, it's great. All of a sudden, COVID hit, it's a bust. Everybody's running out of it. Nobody wants to be in it. What are you going to do with it? And that's exactly what happens. When you have people standing in line to lease it, and all of a sudden they're all gone, and you have a whole plan to rehab, and the TI, tenant improvement, is all based on what type of tenant you're going to have, and all of a sudden they're all gone. What are you going to do? The building sits like that. You have to really deal with your lender. It's not fun. It's no fun at all. So that happened to a lot of people, and you have to learn how to reposition. But certain things you could not predict. Nobody predicted COVID. But I think that the lesson that we've learned was that multifamily, everybody needs a ceiling over their head. Everyone. And multifamily is the most resilient asset class, and that's why we're going after. And today, I'm very busy with something else, as I said. I'm very busy there with the prop tech, which I'll be happy to talk about. In terms of the multifamily aspect, I think that's the next thing. I'll be looking forward to it. The more core plus type of deals, which were perceived by me and by other people also as more boring, because people who love development, who love value add, they go after those, you know, deals that can give you the IRR that you drool over. In the end of the day, you know what? And you're looking over time at those people who made it big, which I have the privilege of interviewing today. You know what? Core plus, small value add, meaning multifamily deal that is solid and income producing today, maybe with 60% occupancy or 70% occupancy. Great. You know what? In a good area, obviously, it has to be checked, every deal individually and so on. But you know what? The B plus, that's a solid thing, maybe not to drool over, but you know what? You hold it over time and you learn how to refi again and you stay there and you make your investors happy over time. How do you say? Slow but steady, you'll get there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's interesting to hear your perspective, just, you know, being someone who, it sounds like office was more of like sort of a sexier asset class with like a higher returns upfront, but then multifamily is more stable and steady growth. Would you say that's how you're looking at it now?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Right now, of course.
Sure.
Well, in the future, we don't know. But
right, totally. So, you know, I mean, I'm just curious, just going back to office, because, you know, there's a lot of office space that needs to be dealt with somehow, some way. Do you think that office buildings, I mean, being in that space, are going to get repositioned in some other, like to some other asset class? Do you think they're...
So it's a good question. Let me answer that. It's a beautiful question. So first of all, talking about office specifically, you have different types of this asset class, just like every asset class, just like retail has, you know, single tenant, so on, and has multi-tenant or strip malls and stuff like that. And just like multifamily has X amount of units and that amount of units in different areas and buildings that are high rise and building in complexes, they're totally different types of deals, right? Same as office. An office in the urban areas, which is, I think, the most challenging right now today, post-COVID and post-COVID, because we don't know when people are going to be back, feel comfortable to rent the space, have another lease, find the right tenants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are in one category. And then you have those offices that are in the more suburban areas, right? In the rural areas. Give you just an example. I had a conversation with a guy who he works for a company that they have offices in the New Jersey area, which are more spread out, rural areas. Like you're talking about those box buildings that have like three flights most, right? Three, four flights. That's it. Those type of buildings. They're not high rise. They're not nothing. Full occupancy.
Yeah.
They have those big tenants over there. They're very comfortable. They have the parking outside.
Mm-hmm.
They made it very comfortable in, you know, in terms of the pandemic. So obviously when the pandemic was at its heat, no one can get out and people had to stay at home and all that stuff. Everybody got hit. But once things got back, they got back to the office and they made it comfortable for them. Those in the office in the urban areas, when they ran out and they went to suburbia, so it's natural that the person that moved to suburbia, especially a family or a professional that has a house somewhere over there, who knows where, and he's living in a house instead of in a penthouse in the middle of the city, all of a sudden that person, okay, no matter which city it is, every city has a downtown. He's there now. It's obviously will be more comfortable for that person, for that company to go and to drive 5 minutes instead of 45 or an hour and a half sometimes or whatever it is into the downtown area to close by an office building that is just close to his house and to rent it out. And that's why office in that category is extremely successful. Obviously, again, it has to be checked. Each area, each deal of it stands alone. But I'm saying, and the general perspective, the general discussion. So I do believe in office, but those areas definitely won.
For sure. Totally. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. Well, we are getting close to time. So I would love to just hear anything you want to share with the listeners about how they can learn more about you, listen to your show, et cetera. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. That's first of all, and definitely share with everybody. I have a show that is called the CRE Shark Eye Show, which focuses on commercial real estate, and everyone can find it. The CRE Shark Eye Show. My name is Yishai Breslauer. You can just Google it and find it. And obviously I give you all the links and they can find that. Heavily involved in prop tech today, helping certain companies to, you know, go into the market and to find investors and stuff like that.
Oh, right. Can you just explain that? Just define what prop tech means for you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Prop tech is short for property technology. It's just like fintech is finance technology and like medtech, et cetera, et cetera. So prop tech is property technology, which includes anything to do with, you know, any technology that has to do with property management, construction, you name it, anything you want to think, acquisitions, big data, AI, artificial intelligence that will, you know, help investors find the right type of, or sponsors find the right assets, find the right deals. And it goes on and on and on. I can go forever with that. But anyways, that's prop tech. And it's so exciting because real estate was pretty much the last sector that technology got into. Meaning technology is something that obviously changed the world. We went from the Coca-Cola to the Google. And real estate is going to be a part of it. Whoever is not going to incorporate or being involved in technology within the real estate arena, those type of people are going to be dinosaurs. So I felt that a few years ago. And that's it. So I'm very involved in that, helping a few companies getting into that.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Yishai. There's just a ton of valuable information and your story about, you know, starting as a teacher and now doing so much amazing stuff in the real estate space, just all over the place. And it's really inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.